Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's say hello to Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. TSN Mike is his handle on Twitter. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. Mike, let's talk a little about Steelers and the Chiefs. After the first quarter, it was scoreless, and then the Steelers scored a defensive touchdown. What was going through your mind when it was 7-0 Steelers?
You really want to do this to me? I mean, I thought you liked me.
I do like you, but I'm just curious if you thought that there was a shot there, because the way things were going, I mean, everyone was tweeting out, hey, that first quarter, even though it's scoreless, the Steelers won that quarter. It went just the way they would hope to stay in this football game. And for a while, there were people nervous around KC, especially after that defensive touchdown. And I'm just curious if you thought, okay, hey, this could happen, or if you thought that what happened was inevitable.
Well, I mean, as long as you're handing the ball off to Najee Harris with no blocking and no scheme, I never really believed that they were likely to win. When they came out, two things happened. When they came out and they handed the ball off wide on the first play, and Najee purposely missed the hole because it was convenient. Because he thought that, you know, that he would get less contact if he went outside. You know, he had the injured elbow. I don't think he was healthy. He did not play as if he were healthy, and he was not used as if he were healthy. If he'd cut it up quicker, there was a nice little seam there. It wasn't going to get him big yards, but it might have gotten him 4 or 5. And instead, he went wider and gave whoever the linebacker or defensive end that peeled off on that play, I'm not sure who it was, gave him a wider target, and I think that Najee ended up with 2 yards. And when the follow-up to that was, oh, let's do that again, then I knew that they were in huge trouble. And the fact that they defended as well as they did for a quarter or a quarter and change, that was a pleasant development, but it didn't change my idea about what was going to happen, because they went into that game with the same approach as they always do, which is, a very vanilla offense that is unlikely to produce points and honestly did not produce points for the last 8 to 10 games of the season. And there was very little chance that they were going to hold the Chiefs at fewer than 4 touchdowns, because there's just too much firepower there. And I did not think that they could match Kansas City, like what I call playing basketball. I didn't think that they could do that with Kansas City. That didn't seem logical to me. And what I mean when I say play basketball, in basketball, you don't expect to shut the other team out. You expect that the other team is going to score. So your objective is to make it as difficult as possible, make the other team as inefficient as possible, and to get the big stops when you need them. And that's what you have to do with the Chiefs. If you can't score at a reasonable level, you can't beat them, because they're going to put up points. And the Steelers did not go into that game with that approach, and understandably so. I mean, maybe you could play like 1930s basketball and slow it down, but they went into that game with very few fresh ideas offensively, and so no, I never really believed that they were going to win. Did I hope that maybe they would fumble 3 more times and maybe that would do it? Sure, but I never had any real belief in their ability to win that game.
So where do you think the Steelers go next? What do you think the future is, especially at the quarterback position now?
Oh, I think there are lots of options there. Maybe none of them are great. It depends a lot on what other teams do. Does San Francisco move on from Garoppolo? I mean, they spent the number 2 or number 3 pick in the 2021 draft on a quarterback. Do they move on from him? If they do, I would be a useful player. I wouldn't give a first-round pick for him. Somebody else might. If somebody else wants to win that bidding war, then they can have him. But if no one really is all that wired up about him, and they can, and they'll give him to me for a third-round pick or something, I'd take him. I would do that for a short-term deal. I don't know that the answer is, I'm fairly certain from what I've seen that the answer is not in this year's draft. They might be in next year's draft. C.J. Stroud at Ohio State is great. I think he's going to be a really significant prospect. Alabama's quarterback is terrific and has real potential. I mean, some of the I know they didn't win the game, and I was there, but some of the plays he made in that game that were dropped were just ridiculous. I mean, he dropped one pass down at the 2 yard line that kind of really was rescued Georgia. Dropped a pass down on the 2 yard line that was just right in. I mean, it was as if he were throwing it into a Coke bottle, and it was right there, and the kid dropped it. So I think the answer might be in the future. I would hesitate to draft a quarterback in this year's draft. I've watched every game practically that Desmond Ridder has played for Cincinnati. My wife is a big fan. We spent 20 years there almost, and she's a big fan of the Bearcats. So I watched almost every game he played, and I loved him as a college quarterback. I thought he did a great job. But would I want him to be the future of the Pittsburgh Steelers? I don't think he's good enough. I don't think he's accurate enough. I was sitting there maybe, I think when they were playing, when they were playing SMU, I think it was, before the championship game. And it was when there wasn't really any clear, obvious Heisman Trophy candidate. No one really had stood out. Bryce Young had some okay games, nice games. His stats were good, but he was never, you know, the team was never dominant. So it was sort of out there. And Desmond had a great first quarter against SMU. And I turned to my wife, why not, Des? And then, like, 7 plays later, I said, that's why not, because he's missing wide open receivers. And so how can he translate into an ideal NFL quarterback? I'd be very happy for him if it worked out. He seems like a really nice young man, but I don't think he's that guy. So I think that they're better off with somebody like Garoppolo in the near term, and then trying to get in position to draft one of the better players in next year, the year after.
Yeah, I'm looking at one mock draft that has him taking Kenny Pickett out of Pitt. You would not be excited about that?
Coming from Pittsburgh, you know, when I watch college football, it's usually just to see, you know, teams that I've been around, you know, in Cincinnati or in Pittsburgh. And so I watch a lot of Pitt's games, and I like him. Do I think I would spend a first-round draft choice on him? No, I would not. I think he's going to be an average to below average NFL quarterback, and I don't want to spend a first round pick on an average to below average player. I want to spend a first round pick on the next Cam Hayward or the next T.J. Watt or the next David DeCastro or Alan Faneca. I mean, I want a guy who's going to be a star at a position where they clearly have a need. And I think that inside linebacker is another position where they could use a great player. So that's what I think they should do. Again, as I said, I think that to select Pickett, and I don't think Pickett will last long enough for them to get him. And they're picking 20th. It was firmly established with the loss to the Chiefs. That's their pick. I don't think that Pickett will be around for the 20th pick. I surely would not expend any resources to try to climb up to get him. I just don't think he's going to be a great NFL quarterback. I think, can he be a starter? Yes. Can he be a starter on a winning team if everybody else is really good? But do I want to wait for him to be that guy? No, because I don't think it's going to happen immediately.
Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News is our guest. All right, Mike, let's talk college basketball. Hey, let's start with K-State. And a real nice win over Texas Tech. Texas Tech was on fire. They were hot. They had put together a couple of really good wins. And K-State Look, they'd started off 0-4 in the conference. They were trying to avoid going 0-5. And boy, did they need that win. And so they beat Texas Tech 62-51. And now tonight they have another crack at a ranked team as they will be at number 23, Texas. And so your reaction to K-State getting their first conference win over a good Texas Tech squad?
Yeah, I thought that they played, you know, to come back. What was really impressive to me about that game was to come back in that game. They came, you know, had a really nice second half comeback. And I said before that I thought, and I think I might have said it on your show, that pound for pound, so to speak, I thought Texas Tech defensively was as good as anybody in the country. I thought they executed their defense better than anybody. And so how do you come back against that team that executes defensively so well? Well, first of all, you do a great defensive job on them. I mean, they made it, the Wildcats made it really hard for Texas Tech to score. Under 40% shooting, only 19 field goals. I thought they did a great job with that. And then offensively, I mean, they shared the basketball so well. I mean, if you take early shots against Texas Tech, you are playing right into what they want you to do. And so they explored their offense. They shared the basketball. Marquise Noel, 9 assists. The team had 16 assists on 24 field goals. You know, I thought Mark Smith's late threes were great. That those two, you know, he only had two in the game. They were both at crunch time. The last one was kind of a dagger type three that really sealed K-State's advantage. I thought those were some really big plays that he made down the stretch. I was very impressed by how hard they worked to win that game, and it's what I've talked about all year with them. Is that they have, you know, they play really hard, they play really together. That they obviously play well in pressure situations because. You know, they had to play great in game pressure against Wichita State on the road, and then this one as well. They execute well late in games, and so, you know, the problem is, can they score enough to stay in those games? And there are certain teams in the league that's going to be really hard against, and one of them is tonight. I don't think this is a great team they're playing yet in Texas. But it's a really talented team. Texas has lots of answers, and they haven't, you know, they haven't come up with those answers on enough occasions to this point, especially in their bigger games. But when they have that talent advantage and they're at home, like they were against Oklahoma last week, when they visited K-State 2-3 weeks ago, it's just really hard to slow them down. This is a tough assignment for the Wildcats.
You know, I'm glad you brought up Mark Smith. I'm not bringing this up because I'm a masochist, but look, I like the kid, and I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for him to do well at K-State, and he's filled a really nice role for them, hasn't he?
He has. Every team needs shooting, and you know, and Mark has been a shooter his entire career. All three stops. It hasn't always been consistent. It's come and gone at times. But he's a player who you can rely on to make shots. And this year he's hitting 40%. Again, he tends to make in bunches more so than consistently hit. You know, like in the TCU game, if he hits one out of five, you know, maybe they win that game. I really thought they were going to win that game. I thought they played very well, but just couldn't hold it late. And again, that's kind of Mark's deal. He'll go 3-for-4, and he'll go 0-for-5, and then he'll go 2-for-4. And maybe that's not that unusual. I think he's a little streakier than most shooters are, and so it's nice to see him get that, you know, that kind of performance in a win, especially like I said, you know, to make both those threes late. After a tough, you know, 3-4 days after a tough evening, I thought it was really great for him. And whether that can carry forward or not, I don't know. Again, the hardest thing for K-State in this season is that there's nowhere to get an easy win. Neither are they an easy win. I mean, there's no easy win in the league, but almost, you know, pretty much every time you're playing a league game, you're playing a high quality team. And we saw that with Oak State going on the road and winning against Baylor. There are no nights off, and that makes it really hard for you as a team to try to get some confidence and momentum. K-State's not going to go out and out-talent anybody in any power conference, but it's hard to outwork anybody in the Big 12 because everybody's so well coached, and you know, 80% of the teams have a belief that they should be in March.
Hey everybody, Joe Spiker, owner of Easton Roofing here. For almost 10 years, we've been a locally owned and operated family business. At Easton, we work on every job with one thing in mind: integrity matters. I grew up in Central Kansas, was raised on the values of respecting hard work. At Easton, we always make decisions based on the ethical, right thing for the customer. That's what integrity means to us. So if you have any questions about your roof, give me and my team a call, 913-257-5426. Easton Roofing, integrity matters.
Yeah, this Big 12 season might be more about which teams are most resilient, because every team's going to have their stretches where they struggle. And on that note, you referenced Oklahoma State winning at Baylor. Baylor, I saw, Mike, became the first team in college basketball history to be ranked number one and lose back-to-back home games. They lost to Texas Tech and then followed it up with that loss to Oklahoma State you mentioned, and they play tonight at West Virginia. What's your reaction to, after going undefeated to start the season, what Baylor's had going on here over the past week?
You know, when we watched Baylor in the first, especially in that, not the first 2 months, but especially in that middle month when they started to say, hey, we're not going anywhere, it looked like how hard it is to beat them. Because physically they could be overwhelming at times, and defensively they were so together. And then all of a sudden you see Texas Tech go down there, and you realize that, well, yeah, but their offense isn't great. I mean, they've got James Akinjo. He's as good a point guard as there is in college basketball this year. They've got Flagler. But what's missing from them, really, in order to be the team that they suggested they could be? And I'm not saying he was there while they were suggesting that, but Matthew Meyer is not having a very good year. And he, at the end of last season when they were winning the championship, he was suggesting that he was the next guy, that he was going to be able to step forward. And based on his talent, he was an NBA prospect, and he was going to average, you know, mid-teens to high teens, and he was going to be something special. And he's not been very good, and I'm not sure what is exactly going on with him, why that's not, you know, why it hasn't translated the promise that he showed last year in big moments and big games on the road at West Virginia, took over the game, obviously had a really good March. Not sure why it's not working, but because it's not, it's like if you can slow down Akinjo especially, you can live with what Adam Flagler delivers. And their bigs are not really guys that are going to catch it and score it much. They're going to take it off the offensive rebound and put it back in because they're so physically powerful. But there's not a ton of post skill there. Chamo Chacho has become a better shooter. But, again, I think that's something that, as a defensive team, you're like, okay, if he's going to beat us with three threes or four threes, we'll have to live with that. But let's just keep him off the glass as much as we can and try to keep him outside and control Akinjo, and if we can do those things, we have a shot. I think that's what last week taught us, that, you know, this is something that one of the better teams is going to think. It's not something that's going to be thought by average to mediocre teams, but the teams that are worried about, can we beat Baylor and win the Big 12, or can we beat Baylor and win the national championship, I think they're going to look at Baylor in a different light now.
So Baylor, because of those two losses, has dropped back. Everybody but Kansas and TCU have at least two losses already in the Big 12. And Kansas has two road games coming up this week, at Oklahoma tonight at 6 o'clock, and then at Kansas State for the Sunflower Showdown on Saturday. How big of a challenge will these two games be for Kansas?
You know, I think anytime you're on the road in a league this good, there are big challenges. I mean, Oklahoma has played well at home to this point in the year. They're not an overwhelmingly gifted team, but they're exceedingly well coached. Porter Moser has done a great job taking over there. When they go on the road, they're not talented enough to overcome most of their opposition. But when they're at home and they're comfortable, they play significantly better. That's not unusual, obviously, but especially in a league like this, when you can't just go roll out there and throw talent at people and outscore them and outperform them with your individual ability, and it's all really dependent on execution and that sort of thing, you're going to struggle on the road. But when you're at home with your crowd behind you, and obviously KU is a huge draw and a team that people want to beat. So I think it's going to be a tough game for the Jayhawks to play on the road. But we've seen that KU has become a better execution team. DeJuan Harris, I think, has done a really nice job at point guard. Again, he's not a great super talent, but he has made a difference in the cohesion of that team over the last 2-3 games. The big key for KU at this point, when I watch them, is the days when David McCormack is really good, they are just they're a nightmare. And on the days when he's not, they're beatable. They're within reach of everybody in the league because everybody in the league is good. So I think it's come down to that he's a huge difference, because their options to be big are not they're not enormous. I mean, Mitch Lightfoot is a good, solid veteran college basketball player, but I think we know what he is by now. He's been there long enough. It's not changing. He's an energy guy. He rebounds well. He moves the ball when he catches it. He catches it well. He moves it to where it needs to be, but he's not going to be a great scorer. So you need that presence from David if you can have it. Otherwise, you're trying to play with three forwards, and you can beat a lot of people in the league with three forwards, because it's not a league full of significant big men like the Big Ten is. Most of the teams in the Big 12 are playing differently, and that's fine. But I think that David is something that, when he is good, he's a huge advantage because of that. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, that consistency of performance just hasn't been there.
So, it sounds to me like you're saying because I think the two questions that KU fans have had about this team this year: what's the rotation of point guard going to look like? Remy Martin's been out for the last couple games. Yesufu played, I thought, pretty decent minutes last game against West Virginia, by the way, in that regard. But that's been a big question. The point guard rotation, do they have dependable production there? And then, obviously, the consistency of McCormack. Sounds to me like you feel like the question with McCormack might be the bigger one for the Jayhawks to answer through the course of this year. Is that fair to say?
Well, I mean, I'm sort of speaking in the near term without Remy out there. When Remy's healthy, and if you want to play him, I mean, he creates lots of problems for the defense and lots of problems for you.
And
that's the deal. And you have to decide which one you're comfortable with and which one you think you might get on a given night. There are moments there have been moments in those past few games when Remy didn't play, when you'd say, boy, it would be really nice to have somebody out there who could take a defense apart. He's not available, but he is what he is. I mean, he's the ball's in his hands. It's probably staying there until it starts heading to the rim. I mean, that's how he plays. And we've seen that's caused problems for defenses. It caused big problems for Michigan State second half of the going back to the Champions Classic. But we've also seen it cause problems for KU at times because there's no flow. And so Harris has come in and brought that flow to them. And again, he's not big. He's not super dynamic. He's not a great three-point shooter to make up for those. But he understands the game at a really high level. He thinks basketball really well, and he understands how to involve his teammates and get the ball where it needs to be. And that's a great thing to have when you've got guys like Abaji and Brown and Jalen Wilson who can really play. And so I think that he has brought a sense of organization to the offense that wasn't as prominent when Remy was playing more minutes.
Mike DeCourcy is our guest. Mike, Iowa State coming off a win over Texas. Texas Tech coming off the loss to Kansas State. Those two teams play tonight in Lubbock. What do you think of this matchup?
Yeah, I think that it would seem to be an ideal matchup for Texas Tech because of the fact that, like I said before, that their ability to defend and to stay together. The one problem that they have, and you saw it when KU played Iowa State a few games ago, is can you control Isaiah Brockington when he can go get his own? That when you're playing a systematic defense and your whole thing is to make sure that teams don't get to the shots they want from their system, from their offense, and then you face a guy who doesn't really, he's not all that concerned about system, that he can go get his own pretty much any time he wants. Now, whether he makes it or not, it's somewhat you can influence depending on how hard you make it to get that shot and how challenged it is. But, you know, Isaiah can go off, and he certainly did in a lot of that game against KU a couple of weeks ago. So I think that's what holds intrigue for me. But honestly, when I look at the league right now, my first thought in almost every matchup, nearly everyone that's on the board, is home team's going to win because the crowds are good. You know, we're back to that. And everybody is playing well at home, and the teams are fairly evenly matched talent-wise with the exception of maybe Texas, KU, and Baylor. And so it's up to every team that goes on the road to try to find, you know, the way to make the game theirs. And I think for Iowa State, that way to do that is to sort of abandon system and just go and try to pick up the pace as much as you can. You're not going to get Texas Tech to play in the 80s. It's not going to happen, especially not down there. But you want to play freely, and if you get beat 20, so what? You know, everybody in this league is going to take a 20-point loss again, except maybe KU and Baylor. They're all going to do that at some point. So, you know, what makes your chances better of winning? Now, they may think that if we just hang around and then toward the end, Isaiah can make 3-4 plays and we can win it that way. I mean, that's kind of what TCU did at K-State, was just hang in the game and make the key plays at the end. I mean, that's another approach to do it, but it's going to be hard to get a road win for just about everybody in this league.
Mike DeCourcy has been our guest. Mike, couldn't really think of a reasonable question to ask about Mizzou at Ole Miss tonight, so we'll just state that it's happening.
Here's what I noticed about this discussion, okay? Nate, and this is true, right? Okay, my team comes in and gets shredded 42-21, and he's all up for talking about that.
Right.
But his team, you know, is struggling, bouncing along the bottom of the SEC, and he doesn't want to talk about that at all. Does that seem fair?
Now, help me. What question? Do you have any information you'd like to...
I'm just saying. Found questions about that beatdown on Sunday night, so I don't know. I'm just asking.
Well, because, I mean, the team that we follow won. I can't, like, Ole Miss, nobody... there's nothing. I mean, honestly, here's the deal. Nobody wants to hear about Ole Miss basketball, and I'll be honest with you, nobody wants to hear about Mizzou basketball. So unless you have, like, a nugget that could be a companion for tonight's game, I got nothing.
I got no nuggets.
I think Steven's following Gary Pinkel's advice. You know, before I say something to you I don't want to say,
I could have not mentioned
it
at all.
I'm not say anything at all.
I could have not mentioned it at all.
Yeah.
I made a statement that they are playing.
Hey, who do you got, Bills or Chiefs, Mike?
There it is.
You know, I think that KC is better at this point. I think the Bills played really well on Sunday night. I think that was their, you know, that was their coda. They wanted this sort of established superiority over the Patriots, and they did. I don't think Buffalo's defense is great. And I think the Steelers' defense isn't great either, but they have moments, and they had a bunch of them in the first quarter. But eventually, KC's offense, you know, I just don't see them. I don't see Buffalo as being good enough defensively to make a difference in that game. The Chiefs. Now, this is a basketball kind of game. This is what I'm talking about. If Buffalo comes in there and tries to control the game, KC will beat them. But if they go out there with the idea, okay, 40 is the number, we got to try to get to 40 or 38 or whatever, you know, somewhere high. Like, if they go in there with that idea, they might have a chance. But if they go in there thinking, oh, we can't, we got to control the game, you know, you're not. You're not going to. I mean, Sunday night proved it. You're just not. The offensive line is better than it was a year ago. The targets are too good. They're too hard to stay with. I don't think that you can beat the Chiefs unless you beat them with a bunch of points. And I'm not sure that you can't score a bunch of points, but you better come with the A offensive game if you want to.
All right. What about Cincinnati and Tennessee?
I don't think Tennessee's very good. I've never thought they're very good. I really don't. Cincinnati is very full of itself right now, and I'm talking about the city, not the team. And I understand why. I mean, it was 30 some years since they won a playoff game, so they should go down there and win. If they don't, I think that's going to be a significant setback for them. Not necessarily decades, you know, another three decades or whatever, but. I think Cincinnati really is starting to believe in itself. I think that Chiefs win helped, and I don't see any reason why they shouldn't go down there and beat the Titans. I watched the Steelers handle the Titans really easily, but I've seen them play the Chiefs and Bengals four times combined, and they couldn't get a stop. I mean, I think all four of those games. We're north of 35 points. And did the Chiefs get 40 in the first one? I can't remember now.
36 to 10.
Yeah, so all four of those games were blowouts. Those are the best teams in the AFC right now. And I will be surprised if they're not playing for the championship out there in a couple of weeks.
Sign me up for Cincinnati and Kansas City at Arrowhead in a rematch. That would be great. Hey, Mike, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys, thanks.
Hey, I've mentioned the game's happening. Didn't
yeah,
I?
I mean,
did
I think
you
that's
know
more
it was happening?
I assume they played this week.
Well, but did you know they were playing at Ole Miss tonight?
I did not know that.
Then you took something away from.
Yeah, I learned something.
The segment that you didn't know, Jake. Did you know?
No clue.
I laid it out there perfectly.
You did. You informed the listener.
So you're a producer,
and
you're producer of the show. And so then, what question would you? What question should I have asked? What would you suggest? Like what?
Well, I look at it, and it says MISS favored by 9, and it's Missouri against Ole Miss. And it's like, well, which Miss is
M-I-Z
favored by 9?
Is the, yeah, so M-I-Z. The abbreviation for.
I mean, that would be the only question. Hey, Mike, is Ole Miss going to cover?
Yeah. You know.
I mean, that would be. Right. You asking me what question I'd ask?
Right. It's exactly that's, right. That's but I can probably answer that question for you,
okay.
And I don't.
Well.
You know, I try to ask questions I don't know the answer to, and I kind of know the answer to that one. And so we'll take a break. Play some Andy Reid after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.